to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. Join me now, won't you, as we travel together. In which direction? Why, outward, of course, or inward. Up, maybe, down, well, back and forth, side to side. Maybe we'll just sort of vibrate. That's a sort of traveling. Right now, I want you to follow me down a rabbit hole. How long will that take, Hardy? Well, just seconds, because it's a literal rabbit hole. And it's about, gosh, I don't know, maybe a cubit. And you go in there, and then there's the warren, which is like a nice little living room. That's where the rabbits live. And they have furniture. It's very tiny furniture. Not as small as you'd think. I gave them a thimble. I said, here's a table for you. They said, that's the wrong scale. Just like H.O. trains. So the rabbit hole there, it's just a little cubby. It's a little space in the ground. You get in, you feel cozy, like you're in a Kafka short story. Like you're an animal in a Kafka short story. You're thinking, oh, a cockroach? No, he wrote other stories too. Lots of animals. There was a mole, a panther, a gorilla, all sorts of animals in Kafka. They should have made a children's show out of just the animals that appear in his short stories. I think it would have been really fun. But a lot of things don't get made. For instance, here's a story. When I was very small and about to go to, I believe maybe it was nursery school even, they had such a thing before kindergarten, they started you in when you were about 2 years old going to school and said, this is school, get used to institutions even though you can barely walk. Get in there, and we'd punch it. I remember punching a card in. You'd have to punch in, and then you put it in there, and then we'd go in, we're two or three. We'd make little things. I don't know what we were making, rabbit furniture maybe? And then you'd come home. But this was actually my first day of school going on the school bus, and I was very afraid of everything. I was very shy. I was terrified of the world. I was terrified of anything that weren't really my mother's legs, even. I would just cling. My mother took me to the bus, and I said, well, I don't know. This does not seem right. And she said, get on the bus. And I'm like, this is contrary to everything that you've taught me. This seems fraught. I do not know if I'm going to be safe or not. I thought that my safety was tantamount. Now you're like, just get on this big container full of children and a shifty-looking adult. She said, no, get on there, and you're going to ride it to school. Now, this is before Sesame Street, so I didn't have anybody to talk to me about these things. They got to school, and then I'll be waiting there, she said. So I rode on the bus, probably tearful, and we got off. Everybody got off, and all the children went into the classroom, and I did not. Because my mother said that she would meet me when I got off the bus. Little did I know that this wasn't literal. All the moms or parents or whatever were in the classroom, not on the sidewalk. So I stood there and I stubbornly refused to go. And I said, my mother said she'd meet me here. And then the bus driver said, now you're supposed to go inside. And I said, I am not to talk to strangers, I said to him. Very forcefully. And I say, I realize that I just violated that rule, but I shall not again. And then I just wept. Someone must have gone in and said, "There's anybody have a child missing?" And my mother went, of course it's mine. And went out and got me and everything. And I felt really, I said to my mother, I said, what happened here is that I had two conflicting orders. All right? This is like you've given a soldier two conflicting orders, or like on Star Trek where they have the prime directive, but clearly you have to violate it to do the greater moral good. This was a lesson in utilitarianism. Star Trek later based an episode on that of my life, I believe. It's weird how that happens. It was before that happened. But that's the way that time travel works. Another way that it works is I've been watching old talk shows, a lot of them from the 80s, 70s, and 80s. There'll be celebrities on there, and I'll know who they are, and I will know their fate. A lot of times they've already died, and something has happened to them in the future, and they don't know about it when they're talking. So I'll look at them at that point in time, like 1982, and they're saying something, and I'm thinking, ooh, 6 short years later, you will meet a horrible fate. And you wonder, if I could go talk to them, and I can, I choose not to, would I tell them? First of all, it'd be awkward meeting the celebrity. Hi, I know you don't know who I am, blah, 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 and you're famous, but I need to tell you something. And they would dismiss it. Even if you yelled at them, it wouldn't matter. I don't think you'd be able to even convey it to them, that information. If you're using movie logic for time travel. Would you want to say it to them anyway? So would you want to go to somebody in 1979 and say to them, in a few years, you're going to marry someone, and it's going to be horrible, and then they're going to murder you, or you're going to die in a fire. Would you tell them? And well, what would be the point? I saw that with the Beatles. You say, oh, John, it's good to meet you. Listen, I don't know whether I should say anything, but, you know, don't book any gigs past this date. You know, would it help the person? No. Does anybody really want to know their future? You wonder. And is a life ever ruined? Like Croesus. Like, you know, you're rich as, but then maybe the last part of your life is just horrible. Like these moments, boy, they count. You got to stack them one on another. And, boy, they can all come tumbling down, I suppose. But does that have any effect on the past ones? Sometimes. Oh, my goodness. Can I tell you something that can ruin the past? Yes, memories can be ruined. Of course they can. Can imagine thinking something that turns out to be untrue. And then you've based a lot of past actions and assumptions on it. And you go, oh, goodness. My memories are all messed up now, right? I never loved you. Uh-oh, you know? So it's very, yes, the past can be messed with, and the future is uncertain. And right now, gosh, it's such a short period of time. I tried to get something to measure it with. I was looking online, and, well, I'd forget what I was doing. And then I thought, well, is now, maybe it's a standard size. One size fits all. Maybe now doesn't vary in length or anything. I always think it does. I go, well, this now is lasting a long time. But, well, this one isn't. This is a short now. But maybe they're all the same. Who knows? I'm not sure about my perceptions because I've experienced them when they've been dulled. And go about my business like they're not. So I think, well, what if they're dulled now? You'd know.
We do know.
Okay. There's kind of a survivor bias here, though, because all the people that are really can't stand me have tuned out and will never tune in. So at least there's something you're getting from it, even if it's like you're like shouting at my voice, oh, I can't stand this guy, but I can't stop listening. That's a phenomenon of radio. That's happened to me. I've been stuck on a radio station because someone's voice is compelling me. What they're saying is garbage. But it's, oh, the way the garbage is laid out. It's like, have you ever seen a garbage collage where they put different trash and everything?
Trash and garbage are different.
Are they? I don't know, man. But let's say you could lay it out in such a pattern that, oh, you've made something out of what is essentially useless, what has been discarded. Now, the past has been discarded. So can we make anything out of that? Is it garbage? Is the past garbage? Is it refuse? Is it, people always talk about things being on the trash heap of history. Is that a literal place? It's kind of boring. What's on the trash heap of history? It's people picking through it. Like the, what's his name? Not fellow, Civil War fellow. He'd be out there, I'm looking for things to confirm what I already believe. Shelby Foote or somebody. So, Shelby. He's gone now, I think. Everybody's gone. They named a Mustang after him. Wow, that must have been a highlight. See, I wrote all those Civil War books, but nothing compares to having that sporty Mustang named after me. Wowie. I will be remembered, I believe, for a short period of time at least, because my body will have to be disposed of somehow. So people, I will be one of those kind of, stubborn facts upon my demise. People go, oh, well, we can't deny him now. In the past, you could ignore him, but now we can't. Somebody is, whoever's stuck with you. It's like a hot potato, a body is. So, who's it last with? You got to do something with you. Oh, God, I didn't want to hear. Then what do you do with it? What do you do with a body that's not being used anymore? I don't know. Gosh, there's so many uses for them. If you go to Europe, a lot of times you'll see in monasteries, they'll think, well, we'll just hang the monks up on the wall. And they'll dry out like tobacco. And then, I don't know what you want to do with a nice dried out monk. Looks good. It's like putting up, but you don't use them for anything anymore. Now, when country folk do that, say, I'm going to put up some leather breeches beans, take those long pole beans, hang them up and dry them out. And I'm not sure what you do with them after that. I guess you can reconstitute them and eat them. That's horrifying. But whatever, dried food, you can't eat them again. Sausage. All the dried chunk of cheese, you can leave that out there hanging around. Nothing's going to happen to it. But I'll tell you what, though. Don't eat cheese that's been locked in an Egyptian tomb for 2,000 years. Because I believe at that point, the spores do turn into literally a curse. And you go in and you'll be immediately killed. And it's just cheese spores. Can you imagine that? Revenge of the cheese. It got back at you. Here's what you get for wasting food. Pssh! I'm going to add more of that Star Trek music to everything. I think I need that under what I'm saying a lot of times because I don't think just the words, I'm not getting through to you just how important what I am saying is that we are getting sucked into this giant cornucopia thing in space. And it's a star, it's a planet eater, and it's going to eat you, and it's called time. Oh, I love you, though. We are alive right now, and that's everybody's been able to say that at some point. I'm alive right now. That's the least you can say. It's all right. It's all right to say the least you can say. And I'm here to say, as I am every week, you say, how can you be cheery and keep saying memento mori? Because I think sometimes people need to be reminded to live. And when memento mori became popular, remember you're going to die. People did it in a religious sense, you're going to face your judge or anything. I use it in a different sense. Not, get right because you're going to be judged at the pearly gates. I say it, hey, this doesn't last forever. So I'm thinking, don't act like it does. That's all. That's just the opposite of how the thing was originated. But then also people came up with a slogan, remember to live, they would say. And some people forget that, to remember to live. They're thinking about dying. So it's both sense of the words, just to tell you. Some people want you to think about death because that's when everything starts. And some people want you to think about it because that's when everything ends. Isn't that funny? And then we're all going to live together somehow. Oh, I'm glad I don't have a kill people button. A button. Could you imagine having one of those? Have you seen those buttons on the ad? You press them and you get what you want from the grocery store or something. Can you imagine having a button you press and it takes a life or something? Just any life. You choose a life. You press that button. It's gone. Oh, that'd be terrifying. If there was just one, probably wouldn't get used. If there were two, then everybody would have to have one because you'd never know who had the other one. We are afraid of one another, not because we are all brutal, because maybe one of us is. And so then you assume everyone is. Everybody pays for that. Isn't that funny? No one looks at actual numbers or statistics. You could say, if there was even numbers, say most people are good. You go, yeah, all right. But there's one or two bad apples. Yeah, okay. But, you know, so it's best to treat everybody like a bad apple. That's not very nourishing. You know, if you're staying good because of the threat of punishment, how long can that last? I wonder. I wonder. You know, they say, oh, the bars on the bank keep good people good, or something like that. They keep you from, you know, your natural impulse to steal. Well, I think a bank is a bad example, because I don't know if that stealing, you know, if that money in there is what was, maybe it was taken from me. I think taking your, if you're drinking some water and I take your cup, that's stealing, and that is your cup. But I don't know about your bank. I got to think about those things. I'm a bit of a simpleton, so I like to think about things for a long time and ideas. And other people are, oh, I'm surrounded by geniuses who are able to distill what they think onto really a bumper sticker. And I have been, there are so many people that are that wise that I can tell you what I think in a sentence. How about that? Because I've been doing it like the dum-dum way. And I revisit things and think about them and think about alternatives and I have to do thought experiments because I cannot just, some people can just come up with the answer. And when you get in debates with people like that, they'll be able to come up with the answer like that. And also, I noticed if you're really talking about something important, a lot of times if you have done anything in your past or know anybody who's been to jail, then you really have no right to talk, I was told. So I don't really know what to say. And I try not to contribute to conversations. When I go to parties, I'll walk up to a kind of a conversation and nod and everything, and I'll smile and everybody smiles. But really I'm eyeing those deviled eggs, and I don't know whether they're good for you or not. We can talk about whether it's right to eat them. But I was at a party not too long ago, and there were two different kinds. Two people had brought deviled eggs, and so there were two different recipes, and they were worlds apart and both fantastic. And I've said to my friend, I don't know whether you're eating eggs right now, but these are to die for. And I'm willing to make small talk with these people to have some of those. But I'm really always looking at the food. I love folks. I like to be surrounded by them as a protective measure. I consider myself one of the internal penguins in the scrum. I'm in there having hors d'oeuvres. All y'all on the outside, I realize you're all supposed to take turns going on the outside of the penguin scrum, but I got stuck in the middle here. I don't know how that happened, but I'm okay with it. I hope you're all right with it. Staying warm, and I'm eating crackers. And I'm with you. In this moment in time, oh, it's not going to last. It will last and it won't last. Let's let it last to the end of the broadcast. If you're driving, let's make it to the end of the broadcast as a little goal. That's done. I take one, people say one day at a time. I go, days are interminable. I have to take, I'm like one, sometimes it's a minute at a time. I'm going to get through this minute. I'm going to get to the next minute. I'm going to get through this half hour. I'm going to get to the next half hour. That's, in the 80s, when I was watching MTV, I would think that about the videos. I say, I'm going to get through this one. There's going to be a good one. And you go through another. This one's going to, if I can sit through just another one, they're all, what, 3-4 minutes? I can do this. And I'm going to get to one that's good. And before you know it, hours and hours have passed. And you go, yes, and it's worth it. But you really have to sit there, I think, and sift through a lot of things. A lot of life is sifting through mud or chafe or garbage to get to the good stuff. And what is the good stuff? A different color garbage or something like that. I don't know what are you looking for? It depends what you're looking for. If you're sifting through garbage looking for wheat, or gems, I don't know. You probably will find wheat. Maybe before you'll find gems in a garbage dump. That's for sure. My goodness. I haven't been to one in a long time. They're good to go to. If you've never been to the dump, if you put garbage at the curb and but you've never been to the dump, you need to go like yesterday and check it out. And just think about everything. Because really, you're sending your stuff off. You should know where it's ended up, you know, what you're contributing to, whether you like it or not. I'm not preaching. It's magnificent, all the waste. It's mountains of garbage. You'd think there'd be more, is what I'm thinking. I don't know whether some of it's breaking down, some of it isn't. It's horrifying. But sometimes they'll put sod over it, over these garbage mountains. That is something else. That's when you really, really, really want a time machine. And that's where Planet of the Apes is wrong. Because you go around there, the only garbage, someone left an old doll. Oh, no. Just imagine what you'd find. Find everything, I think. And all those future movies of the past, they have the wrong detritus. They never have cell phones. That'd be good. I'd be impressed if they have gone there. Oh, what's this, a cell phone? Because maybe it's not the past. Maybe it's a different past. Maybe there's been several Statues of Liberty in the history of the world. Or maybe it's a lot of people think it's a different Earth because of that. I don't even know. But so much of it, when I watch TV, I guess I'm not paying close enough attention. I've gone to movies with friends. And, you know, I'll say to somebody, I had a really good friend I used to go to movies with a lot, and he was really very, very bright person. And we'd go to the movies, and after the movies, I'd say to him, what do you think that guy did with the baseball bat? And he'll say, what baseball bat? And I'll think, the one that figured in, like, prominently in the movie or something. Oh, I don't know. And I was thinking, man, I guess he was disinterested. But he was noticing a lot less than I was thinking. Am I noticing too much? It's really perplexes me how much to notice and see. As a self-conscious person, I used to go to social situations and notice way too much as a way of sort of escaping. You know, you just kind of look at things and go, okay, I see they have some mid-century modern furniture and look at that. And I'd kind of be accidentally memorizing the entire room as a way of avoiding eye contact or conversation or something like that. I just was feeding my brain. I guess I wanted to look busy. Maybe nobody will talk to me if they think I'm working on a math problem. But really, I'm trying to, you know, figure out where that cat. I've seen that couch pattern. Does my mom have that? No, it's not even close. And that, you know, then I'll remember things that are not worth it. And yet there's joyful moments that are completely gone. Oh, that's strange to me. How I've made the mundane has made such an impression on me. What I choose to file away, what I choose to keep. Sometimes when you move a couple times, you say, let's re-examine what I've chosen to keep. And sometimes what you choose to keep are things that are easy to bring with you, not things that are important. Or their importance is really depends on their schleppability, or how easily schlepped are they. That's what we try to give importance to small things. You go, a ring. Oh, this ring means a lot to me. But I had my grandmother's piano, and I put that on it. You know, like, oh, this is important to me. And my friends have it now, and they've had it for 20 years or something because I couldn't move it. I had to leave it with them. So I couldn't take that with me. So that I had to abandon because of its size. If I had had something smaller to remember my grandmother by, maybe I could do it. And I have the memories and those things. And I don't have her diaries. And somebody gave me a piano, so I also have a piano. So that's good. I wonder now if I've stolen that piano because somebody gave it to me in a different town. I've never asked if they wanted it back. Should I ask? I'm not going to ask. I'm going to wait and see if the person that's piano predeceases me, and then I'm going to, maybe I'll offer it to their, I don't know if they have heirs.
I hope not.
I wonder that about things, too. I have the things that belong to people who aren't here anymore, and I wonder about what things of mine people think are important. I worry about that a little bit. I hope nobody throws away, blah, blah, blah. But I won't know or care, I guess. That's the other reason I hope there isn't a heaven. Because that is heaven. That sounds like hell. If I could look down, because I like being here. So I could look down and say, oh, you have to just, now you just have to listen and watch. That would stink. You got to watch, you just go and watch a movie of everybody else's life while you're going to sit here in the dark theater. No thanks. I'd rather be in it or, are you sure? No, I'm not sure. Ooh, watching it wouldn't be terrible, maybe. I don't know. I think it might be, though. They start talking bad about you. Could you imagine falling out of favor? Oh, yeah, well, now they don't like you. Okay, well, nothing I can do about that. And being remembered or not remembered, there's nothing in that, really, is there? I don't know. I like to be remembered during the course of my life, like by people that, you know, I like to, you know, remember what a good time we had together. Maybe we could do that again. Just, you know, let's try. You don't always get around to everything. But then the more people you do that with, set up some opportunities. So I try to remember all my friends and acquaintances and everything because I'm looking for some nows. Oh, we're going to have some nows together. Now's a now. My friend, I will draw you into my heart like it is a rabbit hole. The rabbit hole that most people are talking about is not a literal one, of course. It is based on Lewis Carroll. You wonder why he's not using his real name, which is something else. Or is Lewis Carroll? I might get confused. Anyway, yes, why isn't he using his real name? Because he's embarrassed. And a lot of people are like that. So I'm going to use a pseudonym, Alan Smitty or something. But then I want to become famous as Alan Smitty. That defeats the purpose. That rabbit hole is really a magic one. And it's infinite in a way. You just keep falling. And it's the falling that's interesting. There is no bottom, really. And that's what it implies. It's a bottomless pit. But no one wants to lure you intellectually down and say, oh, I was doing some research the other day and I went down this bottomless pit. And I just kept falling like Gandalf until I turned white and then the Balrog burned me and I don't know where. Then I'm all of a sudden I fell so far, I landed on a mountaintop. You know how that is. Now I've mastered the subject, though. So there you have it. There's always something to learn if you're forgetting. I've gone back. So I'm doing painting now. And this is interesting. So it's like a bit like, scratch that. It's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. I remember going there and thinking, oh, first of all, it's not gold. It's this weird rust color or something. And then they were painting it. And someone told me they're always painting it because by the time they get finished, they got to start again. And I think that way about learning. By the time I get to the end of the subject, I forget the early stuff. This is true with a lot of books, too. I go, man, now I don't remember the beginning. It took me so long to get to the end, and I got to go back and learn again things that I forgot. So if you forget enough, it's wonderful. You can always be in a state of discovery, which is exciting. So every day for me, is like going to a museum, especially if you visit your old garbage. I have a storage space. I had a recurring dream. I don't have it so much anymore, but I'd have this recurring dream that I suddenly remembered that I had this apartment in like a student complex. This goes way back because it's based on real things. And I still have stuff there and I forgot to get it. And I got to go get all this stuff from this apartment. And I don't quite remember where it is. But my junk is there. This evolved into hotel rooms where I had to go, you know, did you get the stuff out of the hotel room? No, I didn't. And I got to go find the hotel. I don't know where the key is. I don't know where the room is. And I've left something important and valuable there. Am I giving you clues to my psyche that I don't want to give, inadvertently giving them? There was just a show on, they're saying, if you had dreams like that, you're a so-and-so. Well, then I'm a so-and-so. I'm going to cop to it. I'm always panicked about things. I've always felt I was about to lose something that I was, you know, maybe that's the feeling of having a body. I think I came into that world like that. It's like, hey, enjoy life. The dominant feeling is, you know, race against time. You've got a time-sensitive errand. Enjoy. And I don't know if I fully am comfortable. I'm most comfortable when I guess I forget the premise. Oh, have you forgotten the premise of being with me? No. Do you know when radio first started, they put everything on it at once? They believe that we will take stage shows, variety shows, and give you that this microphone was like being in a room. And you'd be in a room with a stage, that sort of thing. And then they thought, how can we pay fewer people? And then they realized that it could just be like being in your head, that they didn't have to have a room, that it could shrink. And then it became more intimate, and radio became a smaller space when the person was speaking, maybe. And it depends on time of day. Sometimes you want to hear more space like this. A lot of times on those radio shows, morning things or podcasts, there'll be more than one person, and they're laughing at it, making each other laugh. Now, that's terrific. A lot of people like that. I've always felt that that was disconcerting, and I imagine that I was in a prison cell, and those were my guards outside the door, cackling and laughing at their own jokes, and I wasn't able to participate. That's how I felt. When I hear a single voice, it's like the prisoner in the next cell is calling out to me. And I call back, but they can't hear because they're deaf or they're wearing headphones or something. I don't know. It's not my business. I'm just grateful that it's more than a tap. Tap, tap, tap. Are you there? Oh, yes. I too am here. I too feel cut off and lonely and confused. I too am suffering. I think the biggest difference between me and a preacher is that a preacher reminds you of all the terrible things and then gives you a solution. And I remind you all the terrible things, and then I say, yeah, what are you going to do? Which I don't know how comforting that is. I guess this is up to you. There's so many different ways of dealing with things. It's like getting down a river. How many different ways of getting down a river? Do you remember there was a Swiss family name, and I don't even think this is a Swiss name, so I'm going to change it. There was a Swiss family named Klug. Swiss family Klug. It was Robinson. And they were on a island, Tom Sawyer's Island, and they were going to have a race. I'm getting this from the movie. I don't know if the book is different. And they all had different types of animals. Some of them from the Pacific, some of them from Africa. All on this magical island. And they rode them all against one another, but they were like all the animals that you might see on a merry-go-round. They might have been on a merry-go-round and they were on drugs and they thought they were on an island racing ostriches. Not for a second did they pause and say, how likely is it that we're racing ostriches versus zebras? Zero, zero likelihood. But this gave me the thought that I had earlier. Thank you. I'm going to begin. This is so funny. So we've got about 30 minutes to go. This would be the point in your flight where the pilot basically tells you we're getting ready to land. You go, oh, yay. But it's not really, like, well, that's a, but we're still 30 minutes out. Hey, we're getting ready. We just want to prepare now. We're going to begin our descent. It's so slowly. And that's what I feel like the second half of this show. I'm going to descend so slowly, you won't even notice it. And then at some point, you'll just hear, and we'll screech to a halt. That's how it's done. And I learned that. I learned a lot of how to speak to people by using, well, the telephone is very similar. You have to put your, because when telephones, when I would make that mistake, you go,
I love you too, Granny.
And you say, speak up, I can't get closer.
I love you too, Granny.
Now you're too close. So you get an idea of how far away, and those of us who grew up with the old handheld phones, those of us who grew up with the crank kind on the wall are all dead. I think Jed Clampett was the last one that remembered that. But, yeah, you know, you learn microphone technique from that. I once asked, this is honest to God, I asked Michael Winslow, I said, how did you learn, how to do all that stuff on a microphone? And he said, I got a microphone. And I said, okay, thank you. And so that's the thing. You learn by doing. Again, you want to make sounds. You want to sound like Jimi Hendrix's guitar on a microphone? Go get a mic. You know, he probably started with like a Mr. Microphone or something. I didn't press him because I was embarrassed. I don't know what I thought. Like he made his own out of, I was five and I made it out of a toilet roll and cellophane. But no, he was pretty serious, I guess, pretty early on. I also make sounds in my sleep, I'm told. And they sound like different things, biological things, I guess. There was an episode of I Dream a Genie where, what's his name, Winchell, the ventriloquist, was on as a artist who was going to do Major Nelson, or General Nelson by now, I think, later, and they jumped the shark, and it's like, Admiral Nelson. He's going to redo the house all modern, and he makes this modern sculpture, and it was doing that noise. And I remember seeing that as a kid and being really repulsed by the idea that there could be this piece of art that had that made intestinal noises. And I thought, I do not trust these hippies, because that's what the portrayal was, right? It was, what's his name? Winchell? Paul Winchell? Is that right? Somebody's saying in my ear,
Paul Winchell.
He was a ventriloquist. Ventriloquism is, first of all, spelled with an E and very difficult to do. I could do the radio kind, like Charlie McCarthy. You know, how are you today, Charlie?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm Edgar.
Edgar. How are you, Edgar?
I'm fine, Charlie McCarthy. I had a Charlie McCarthy puppet dummy when I was a kid, and it sat on a chair, on a child's rocking chair in the corner of my room. But those ones that you bought in the store, their eyes didn't go shift right to left, which is good. So they can't be possessed by any kind of spirits or demons. They're perfectly safe. It's the kind where the eyes move that those can be, demons can take up residence in them. They don't want the fixed eye kind, the demons. They don't like that. It hurts. They get all, their eyes get all dried out. They'd like to be able to blink and look around. If you were a demonic spirit looking to inhabit something, wouldn't you? I like to put myself in the place of others. I don't ever assume anything. Oh, the human heart has many dimensions. In fact, it's constructed like a tesseract. Did you know that? Your heart is actually a hyperheart. And every side of the ventricle is a ventricle. I know that's hard to explain, but at least mine is like that. I don't believe that Doctor Who has two hearts. I think that that's just in the TV series. I think the real Time Lords are either human or they're not human. Nothing biological has two hearts, does it? Two stomachs, do that. Make them like cow people from the future. Yes, you can tell I'm a Time Lord because I have my regular stomach and my rumen. And then Doctor Who would cough something up. Fish and chips or whatever, I don't know. Or jelly babies. And he'd cough up jelly babies from his rumen and eat them again. I remember that because Tom Baker is a space cow. Not the actor. Did they have... I wonder if they did that ever. If I was an actor, I would say, I will be in your movie on one condition, that you have a character in the movie whose name is my real name. So let's say I'm Hardy White, and I'm playing Leroy Judd or something in your movie, but I want a character in the movie called Hardy White. It doesn't have to be me. It could be any, you know, you could just say, yeah, I saw Hardy White at the barbershop, and he told me you were here. All right, come on in. And then there'd never be any mention of it again. But that's a very important thing in the contract. I won't say, a friend of mine books shows. And there was a contract. I've said this a million times. I'm embarrassing myself and others. But there was a performer. And he performed solo, needed a stool, and he needed a glass of water. And included was a sketch or a picture of the glass, the dimensions of the glass, what kind of glass. I don't think this is crazy looking back, because if it's sort of a prop, I would, that detail would be okay with me. Like a bottle would be unacceptable. If it was me on stage with a stool and a glass, then the glass would be important to me as a detail, and I probably would put it in there, in the contract. I don't run into this because no one wants to book me for anything, but if you have anything, I don't know if you want me to speak at your son's bar mitzvah or anything. I don't know when I would do it. I guess at the party, not at the service, but I could give a short drosh. I wouldn't mind. Say, hey, I know this is all unusual, but I'm being here to share with your simcha is, for me, is such a blessing. And I don't know the bar mitzvah, but he seems nice. And he has learned Hebrew phonetically, exquisitely. I love it. So I could do that, or I could go to the party. I haven't been practicing ukulele. I could do some solo bass stuff. I don't know if the kids like that. I could do a little DJing, a little scratch. I did a bat mitzvah one time where I did have turntable. I was scratching, and I was asked to leave. You think that's crazy, and that didn't happen, but it did actually happen. I didn't know what they meant by DJ. I don't think they know what they meant. Have you ever been hired, and you know you're going into the job, and you go, I know they misread it. Like, I know that they just spelled the name of my profession wrong, and I don't belong here. But here we go. You've hired the wrong person, and I'm showing up anyway. Oh, I love that. It's not a bad feeling. I almost felt that way coming to this radio station. Okay. Oh, all right. I apologize in advance. I'm not sure what you... And then I found out that it was okay. I was like, oh, it's all right. It's all right. And why is that? It's not low standards. It's open-mindedness. I didn't think anybody was that receptive, that curious. The audiences here are rare. I don't mean to brag on our radio station. I say our because the listeners, they have a sense of ownership. So we talk about it's like our thing. You know, on both ends of the radio, it's our thing. We know that, right? You, FMU listeners, you know what I'm talking about, right? And but the people here self-select for curiosity. They're curious. They're searching. They like to listen. They like to learn. They take chances. And yes, I'll tell you what you say is that's sophisticated in the true sense of the word, where the S-O-P-H part means wisdom. You know, you're looking for wisdom, and you have the wisdom to understand that we find things that are beautiful to us or useful to us in a variety of different places, and sometimes they're covered with poo, and you've got to wash them off first or repaint them. You know, there is potential in the knowledge we find. Sometimes it doesn't come to us fully restored, the past. We have to clean it up a little bit, look at it, you know, scrape the things off of it. When I look at these old talk shows, it's hard to look at them and ignore what's happened since to see them fresh. So when you watch that Beatles show where they're composing a song that you know inside and out, it seems strange that they don't know it. That's a world without that song yet. It's inconceivable. It's like watching a baby being born or something and knowing the baby's already old, already tired of the baby. And here it is fresh. You can't ever return to that. And that information from the past comes in here. It's all got stuff, barnacles on it. You'll never get off. It's changed. It's changed the minute it happened. Oh, what a wonderful, strange thing we're in. I hope that I have the courage to connect with other spirits and other souls in this life without thinking that I'm going to pay some price for my mistakes. If I'm going to be curious, then I'm going to stumble into many a cave. I'm going to go down many a hole that I think is infinite, that's only 3 feet deep, with a rabbit staring back at me. And rabbits are nasty. And it'd bite, if you stick your head down that real rabbit hole, it's going to bite your face off. And wasn't, I think, who was it? That was Jimmy Carter was attacked by a rabbit. If I had seen him on one of these TV shows in 1976 or something, I'd say, oh, Jimmy, you be careful. Because I think a rabbit attacks you, if I remember correctly. I could be spreading the wrong kind of information. This is another reason I don't go back in time and warn people. Because you go, oh, I get you guys confused. I'm so sorry. I got you mixed up with somebody else. That could happen. Oh, that would be tragic. You go, Robert Klein? Richard Klein? Which one of you? I don't know which happened. I'm sorry. I don't know anything. But that would be funny, too. You go back in time and say, I want to ask you something about my future self. You go, yes, go ahead. You know, what happens to me? And I honestly don't know. I'm so sorry. I lost track. That's a good question. I can go back. I can go into the future and Google you. What is this Google? But I think you're okay. I think you're still alive. Is that okay? I mean, I don't know what happened to you. I'm still alive. I'm pretty sure. And I'm going to seize that and do what? Well, nothing. I've been painting a lot, though. And I've been painting oil paints. And I really enjoy doing that. Say, Hardy, are you any good? I reject that question. I'm not good or bad. It's irrelevant, really. And I'm just painting to paint. And I'm making pictures. And I'm making choices about colors and shapes. And that's really what I enjoy doing. And the painting, I abandon them when they reach a point of completion or harmony. But I wouldn't have to. I could really fuss with it forever. But I'm sort of anxious to move on. But I could really mess with it for a long time. You could rework a painting infinitely, changing colors subtly, doing all sorts of things like that. Changing the path that your eye takes around a composition. Always think about that. Change the way two colors next to each other. Do a third thing. Oh, there's so many ways to move the pieces around. It has to do more with concentrating and looking than it does, having these opportunities to do it on a bigger scale or anything. I was listening to a lot of Orson Welles interviews, and, you know, I think, well, making movies would be exciting and everything. But I can basically recreate making Citizen Kane with a pencil and paper.
How is that?
Well, it's the degree of importance that I attach to the decisions. It's that we don't have, they don't have the same consequences, but I can fake it. And in my mind, I can give it great import. It's just perspective, you know? Might be, well, that person isn't as great as they think they are, or they are greater than they think they are. All we know is that we want some sort of disparity between the way that someone thinks about themselves and reality. We like that when it's out of whack. People either think too much or too little of themselves. It seems acceptable to us. But who knows? I don't know. I'll never. This is a great thing. I've lived long enough to realize nobody figures it out, and if they do, they also die. So, how about that? I figured it out. Bye. I always think that when I go to a, I've gone to a restaurant. Do you ever go to a restaurant or a cafe or something? Maybe it's got a complicated ordering process, and you figure it out, and then you leave, and you leave the town. You never go back. And that's happened to me several times. You go, all right, hotels. That's what I do. Go, now I know where the ice machine is. Now I know how to get to the breakfast room. I know where the free coffee is. Goodbye forever. And every time I leave that hotel, all that information about that, how I planned my little daily life for those 2 or 3 days. It was important then. There was some discovery and everything. It becomes immediately irrelevant. Now, almost everything we do will become immediately irrelevant at some point. But think of how every moment could be you and me looking for the ice machine in a strange hotel. That adventure. Let's explore. I heard that the banquet rooms on the first floor are very old. This hotel is actually very old. It was built in the 1890s, and if you go in those old convention rooms, they're dark at night, and they're wooden with wooden stages, and you hear strange noises. Sometimes you think it's the ghost of a wedding that happened in 1919. Ooh, or earlier, around the turn of the century, right before they had a shot for syphilis. I was did a research on a story like that. The people that died right before they had a shot. Oh well, sorry. I'm sorry. We all have to go some way. There's always somebody's going to be the last person who dies in a war, or the person who dies before the cure. We are in the middle of the penguin scrum. We are in the middle of the stream. We are running in the strange hotel. You and I, we're together. Oh, let's make this memory vivid. Let's give it great detail. How do we give it great detail? By seeing, by looking, by letting it burn into the brain. Let it sear into there. Let it, like, oh, not burn into, that's bad. Like a photograph, exposure. Let the light shine in on it. Let it get a good image, a nice permanent image. And we can dodge and flash little parts and emphasize some and cover some up, send some into the shadows and send some into the light. But we're together. We're together and we are alive at the same time. How romantic to be alive at this time. Oh, you and I, we are artists. We are artists. We're smoking a pipe in a salon. We discussed great ideas in our day, didn't we? Oh, yes, and we had adventures. Some of our lives were small and intimate and strange and quirky. Others were expansive, large, some brief, some interminable. And that was our time. It's right now, and it's bright, and it's burning bright, and we're burning bright together. Oh, I'm glad to know you. I don't know you. Well, I know you know me and you don't know me, don't you? And I know you and I don't know you, both at the same time. We're experiencing this thing. You're hearing my words. You're letting them in. I thank you for that. I don't know whether it's just curiosity. I wouldn't care if it was just I was having a strange conversation at a restaurant and you were eavesdropping because you'd never heard anybody quite that stupid. That's still a sort of listening. If it's the truth, I want you to hear it. I'm not going to try to, you know, make it seem like I know more than I do, or I have some wisdom I don't have. I have a knowledge of what it's like to be alive, and I have some experience with difficult true things. And so I can face them, you know, not a long time, but enough to learn a bit, enough to keep me humble, enough to keep me kind, enough to keep me gentle. And I know that's important, and I'm not gonna change from that, I don't think, because the kindness and the gentleness has served me well, and I've appreciated it so much from others. Unbelievable how impressed I've been by kindness and gentleness as opposed to bullies, as opposed to overt, obvious strength. You know, I've been impressed more by the subtle, about the powers of those who appear weak, of just how magnificent any ordinary life is. Any. And the reason it doesn't seem that way is because that we diminish others because the difficult truth of their complexity and the intensity of their feelings, it's hard to imagine if other people are feeling what you're feeling. That's scary. And so we diminish them a little bit and make them sort of extras in our life. And every once in a while, your eyes will open and you see I'm surrounded by mystical beings and of all sorts of shapes and sizes. And in a massive, wonderful confusion, but also a strange harmony. You know, at once at odds with the world, and so obviously a part of it, an extension of it, in collusion with it, in harmony with it. It's odd. It's odd to be alive. And it's odd to be in a hole that isn't a hole. So join me as we come out the other end. Wipe yourself off. There was no rabbit. There never was a hole. It's just you and I. We're okay. We're going to take some deep breaths now. We're about to land. I'm going to bring you about safely. The temperature where you're about to land is all temperature. So don't worry about that. There was a time when we had to sort our clothes into two different piles, but now you can put everything in together. Because it's feelings fast. The feelings won't, we won't run. We're going to stay fast, steadfast. I love you as a human. I don't know, like, personally whether, you know. But in theory, you are wonderful. And I'm glad you're alive with me. And don't worry, if you know, it's like the weather. It'll change soon, so... I'm glad we have the moment. Oh, my friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for listening, and I will see you again next week.
Good. So, in singular, you started to tell me something about the...
Peace of mind is out of reach. The scale scales are sometimes unbalanced, and you bear the weight of all that has to be. I hope you see that you can lean on me, and together we can calm the stormy seas. When love's so strong and so unselfishly, and I tell you now that I made a vow. Keep on.